Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another Sunday weekend wrap. On this long weekend, it's hard to keep track of what the day is, actually. I've spent all day thinking it was Saturday, actually. Joining me, as usual, tonight we have the inimitable Nikki New. How are you, Nikki?
I'm very well.
And the stalwart Macca 23. How you going, Macca?
Very good, thanks.
That certainly came off the top of the head. What a weekend so far in footy, eh?
Oh, my tips are shocking.
Oh, yeah, tips are out the window.
Nikki, I've got one right for the weekend.
I have three.
It actually puts our win in good light, considering all the other upsets that's happened. Let's kick right into it, and ignoring, obviously, our game for the moment. On Thursday night, we had the Sydney Swans overpowering a pretty disappointing Western Bulldogs 12-16-88 to the Bulldogs 6-6-42. Strong margin there, 46 points, and the Bullies only just going at the moment.
Yeah, they're only just going, but Sydney also, they're in reverse. They're improving and getting back to what they can do. Their midfield is starting to fire now, and that makes them a fairly dangerous proposition for anybody to play now.
Yeah, it's one of those where the ladder position really doesn't illustrate their current form. They're in good nick, and if they make the eight, they'll do some damage, I reckon.
Yep, I agree with that.
Saturday, we had the Suns in a really good win over Hawthorn. The Suns 13-17-95 to Hawthorn 12 goals 7-79. I noticed our mate Jared Lyons in the top disposals again with 28 disposals.
Yeah,
well.
He did. He's had a very good year, actually, and I'm pleased to see that because he was an honest foot soldier. He waited for a long time to get a chance with us, and he had a pretty good year with us. But he's still not the answer to if you want a complete midfield. But he's a good foot soldier, and he's doing a good job for them.
I reckon he's exactly what they needed, actually, Macca. He's just that workhorse, isn't he? He'll get it out, and he'll dish it off, and he's pretty clean and exactly what they needed. The Brisbane Lions, I actually tip Brisbane, much to Scorpus's disgust on Thursday night.
Yeah, but what was Scorpus, no?
Yeah, well, yeah, you can take that up with him. Brisbane, 18 goals, 13-121 to the Frio Dockers, 9 goals, 10-64, a margin of 57 points. And when that midfield gets on top, Brisbane, there's still a decent team and probably buoyed by Shaki's re-signing during the week too, I'd imagine.
Yeah, but they do have a very good midfield. And
Macca. Macca, aren't Brisbane crap and all their players are crap?
Let me finish, Nikki.
I'm just remembering a couple of weeks ago when you said all of them are crap, and I'm like, hang on, no, they're actually not too bad.
Yeah, well, they are crap. But they have a very, very good midfield, and if the rest of the crap joins in and puts a bit of effort in, it does make them, against the lower sides, a bit of a danger. But overall, I still regard them as a bit of a crap team because they do have some players playing for them that wouldn't get games elsewhere.
Nevertheless, when you're starting with Zorko, Beams and Rockcliffe, that's not a bad starting midfield. So, and Frio, very disappointing. But you got to say, it must be a tough road trip going from Perth to Brisbane, especially when the weather's not great.
Yeah, and you've got to make the point too... You got to wonder what's going on with their number one man at the moment, or the alleged number one man. You know, he won't sign, but he's playing shit.
Well, he's going to sign. That's pretty much done and dusted. St Kilda have pulled out, and all reports are that he will sign. You got to remember, he's had some pretty horrible injuries, Macca, and that leg injury that he had, that takes a while to get back.
Well, it obviously does, because he's really not a shadow of the player that he was, he's at his prime. Now, maybe he will be next year, but he's certainly not this year.
We had the Bombers getting up over Port Adelaide. Gee, that was terrible to watch, wasn't it? Essendon, 19 goals, 17.
Put it this way. Just coming home from the SANFL, to the start of that game and just going, oh, can we turn the radio on? I want to hear Kane Corns cry.
1917-131 to the Power, 8-13-61. And I tell you what, there must have been some sort of anti-Port Adelaide spray on the grass down the centre corridor, because Essendon just waltzed up and down the middle of the ground that whole match. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I tell you what, I thought they played brilliantly, actually. They took every chance under the book, and they ran and they ran. And it actually exposed that Port Adelaide are a relatively slow side, in my opinion, anyhow. And the other thing, I want to give a brick back to 5-8. One of my pleasures of life is, after Port get thrashed, is to listen to the 5-8 and listen to their supporters ringing up and bitching and howling and screaming. And they only let about three callers on, then they went off the air.
Well, they are on the...
Could they actually allow the rest of the calls on? Maybe they weren't going to get past the rules.
Well, they're on the power payroll now, aren't they? So they've got to be a bit careful. Today, in a major upset that sees us on top of the ladder, Carlton hanging on to win 10-11-71 to the Giants 9-16-70. Nobody gets that right in their tipping, I wouldn't have thought.
No, but Carlton, you're welcome for Matty Wright, for Ed Curno, and probably because you got Ed Curno, you got Charlie as well. You're welcome. Yeah.
And I also want to make the point too, I was talking to Phoenix off air, and it just goes to show that if you're a little bit off your game, and it doesn't matter who you play, if that other team is prepared to bleed and die to get the ball, and that's what Carlton were as a team, and it just goes to show that a lesser team can beat a better team if it's just a little bit off its game and the other one's really flat out.
I've always had this issue with GWS, is that whilst they have a lot of really high-end talent, and those guys can play well under pressure, if it is sustained pressure, they don't cope well because they've never had to cope with that all through their junior careers.
Well, and it's showing. I see GWS and Adelaide as very similar in the way that we play, although I felt, and we'll get to this in a moment, but I felt like our game, we gutsed it out when the game got a bit ugly, when St Kilda tried to shut it down. But I think that GWS play an attacking brand of football. They're always running ahead of the ball, and when the game isn't on their terms, I think they do struggle. We saw that in the prelim final last year, and we've touched them up a couple of times as well. They do struggle to play defensively when they need to. And
that's what finals is all about.
Exactly. So that's an area of their game. And I think it's a very good point that you raise, Nikki, that these guys, they're a bunch of number one draft picks that have always had things their own way in their junior careers. You know, they probably only know how to play one way. But anyway... So all that leaves us with a ladder that's looking pretty decent because it has the Adelaide Crows on top with 36 points and 141, nearly 142%. GWS also on 36, but far inferior percentage, 116. We've got Geelong with a game in hand and Richmond with a game in hand, and also Port with a game in hand. Geelong on 32 points, Richmond on 28 points, and Port on 24 points, slipping back into the pack. Essendon, the big movers, after their win over the weekend, they're up to 24 points. The Bulldogs as well on 24 with the Eagles, both with a game in hand. And then Frio slipping out, and with the... what is that? The third worst percentage in the comp. You can see them sliding pretty quickly, I reckon. Currently in ninth, but with a dead set weight around their legs going downwards. Melbourne obviously play tomorrow against Collingwood. That'll be a very important game for both teams because both teams could really start to, either could find themselves in the eight by the end of the game tomorrow. St Kilda slipping down, they've really fallen off a cliff. Gold Coast on the move.
They've hit the wall.
Yeah, Saints have. Look like it anyway. It's difficult to believe that they're the same team that beat GWS a few weeks ago. The Suns going all right at the moment, and winning away is always good for Gold Coast, so they're on the move. Sydney also, as we spoke about, on the move, and with a healthy percentage, 105. So If they get anywhere around the eight, they will do some damage. Then we've got North, Carlton, Hawthorne slipping down to second to bottom, and the Lions, despite their win, still on the bottom of the ladder. So, at the halfway stage, guys, the Crows on top with 9-3. That's you would have taken that at the beginning of the year?
Yeah,
completely.
Yeah, they look. It sets us up nicely in the sense that we've virtually got a game in hand because of our percentage. And now it's really just up to us now. The possibilities of being top two are there. If you look at our future program, there's some very competitive matches in that lot. And it's just up to the boys now whether they're good enough to win enough of those games to stay there.
I agree. Top two is very much up for grabs, and it's ours for the taking, Macca. And I was talking to my lad the other day, and we were both saying that this is almost a Bradbury season where it's going to be last man standing. You know, there's a lot of teams doing a heck of a lot of things to try and get themselves out of contention. And given some of the losses suffered by some of the other teams, I guess it puts our losses into perspective. That, you know, you only have, like you mentioned earlier, you only have to be a fraction off and the other team come to play, and all of a sudden you've got a fight on your hands. And, you know, all the teams in the top eight, and particularly in the top four, have all dropped games that they should have won. We have GWS, Geelong, Richmond. We've all lost games that you would have expected us to win. So, you know, it's a very, very wide open season, and it really... highlights the importance of having those two home finals at the end of the year. And as I said, top two's out for the taking at the moment.
Well, it was interesting listening to In Ken We Trust for Port Adelaide talking after the game. He made the point that every one of the teams in the eight actually has had a game like Port Adelaide had. And he said because of the extreme competitive nature of the competition at the moment, exactly what we've been saying, you've only just got to be a little bit off and you have one of those games. And he said that's what he wants to put it down to, because he thought he had the trust of those players and had trust in those players. And he's going to put it down to one of those things and get on with the job the next game.
Well,
and didn't we rip Mikey for saying something similar last week?
Yeah, we did, Nikki, but I think the difference between Adelaide and Port, and not focusing too much on Port tonight, but the difference between the two teams is that we've had some reasonable success against fellow competitors in and around the top eight, whereas Port hasn't beaten anyone in the top eight yet. So,
no, I think they're much overrated.
Yeah, yep. Ken might find that his trust is a little bit unfounded, but, you know, I mean, it's a, as we've just spoken, it's a long season, and even, as PJ says in the chat, even the Swans, if they sneak into the eight, that'd almost be favourite, because they'd be,
yeah,
they'd be in
wrong.
There on some pretty good form, and we've seen what happens with that week's break now, freshens everyone up, so wide open this season.
Yeah, and I also endorse what Nikki says about Port. They've been overrated. If you're playing a player like Tumpus in your team, well, you there is some weaknesses in your list.
Yeah, I'd agree. Anyway, let's move on from that and talk about the Adelaide v St Kilda game. And it was Adelaide 16 goals, 15, 1-1-1, defeating St Kilda 7 goals, 12, 54, a margin of, 57 points. And really, for mine, before we get into the stats, the game was over and won at half time.
Yeah, all over then.
Up until, just talking a little bit about the other games, but up until the game today, every game had been decided at half time, literally.
Yep. Fast
start. For this round. It was really weird.
Fast start by Adelaide. Was good to see them cracking in early. A couple of notables that I'll point out in a moment. And even when St Kilda tried to shut the game down a little bit and play a little bit ugly, and they man-on-manned from about halfway through the second quarter, I reckon, it was good to see us still find a way to put score on the board, even though it wasn't as free-flowing and as fluent as we might have liked. I just thought it was a good, solid win. You chalk up the 4 points and move on, really.
Yeah, because I think, you know, they've been saying we have to find another way to win. But when when our opposition mans up in that template that Taruchi keeps talking about to beat the Crows, which there is some truth, I might add. But they did that. They did everything according to that book, but we still managed to win by at times playing ugly, at times catching them out, at times playing very good football, at times playing desperate football. I just thought that it was a much better game in the sense that it wasn't just played everything on our own terms.
It was really interesting being at the ground because, oh my God, that was a boring game of football. Yeah. And it was frustrating and horrible. I haven't watched the replay yet because I was like, do I really want to? Because that was just horrible to sit through live. My parents did watch it. And from my dad, I actually got, because we looked an awful lot better on telly.
Yeah,
what it did at the ground. There was a completely different impression you would get from just watching on TV.
You're right, Nikki, because, you know, Mrs. Mack is still not being well. We didn't go. And I was glad that we did, because on the television, you did get in that period that Phoenix was talking about, which I think probably lasted close to 1.5 quarters, maybe even, where they sort of neutralised us to some degree by, or to quite a major degree, by just making it into a brawl and an all-in wrestle one-on-one. But there was some fine individual stuff, either preventing it or even creating something amongst all that mass of players, Nikki, where it would just look like a bit of a slogging brawl if you were there at the game.
Yeah, just one of the ones I actually thought played quite well but wasn't helped by his teammates who kept trying to handball it to him behind him or at his feet, which stuffed him up, was Miller. He actually continued on with that form that we've saw 2 weeks ago, and it was really pleasing just to see how hard he was cracking in, but he was getting in some brilliant spots to create this run and just didn't quite hit him properly with the handballs and brought the Saints players too close. But to me, he was actually a really good player that night.
Yeah, if you had a GPS of him, you would find he covered a bit of ground to make those positions too.
Hmm. Yes, he did.
I don't know whether St Kilda actually played the blueprint, Macca. I think all they did is really went man on man. I mean, they obviously sat on Rory, but they certainly...
And then we just moved Rory around.
Yeah, they didn't sit on Brodie Smith, and they didn't really put anyone specifically behind the ball loose. They just basically went man on man and just tried to crowd up the contest a bit. But it's always difficult to move the ball under those circumstances with any sort of fluency, and I felt like the only thing that really stopped us from kicking a bigger score was our entries into forward 50 were a little bit loose and weren't overly clean. And that
Dougie
shows,
and Sloan.
Yeah, Dougie in particular. But let's go to the head-to-head stats first of all. And it was Adelaide 4-18, disposals to 4-1-3, so pretty even. We went at just on 1-1 kick to handball. St Kilda had far more handballs than kicks, trying to work their way through.
That is their game plan a little bit, though.
Yep, they tried to run and gun a little bit, and particularly in the first quarter. I felt like in the first quarter they wanted to play their own game and see how they went, and then I think Richardson after that just basically shut it down. Marks around the ground, 92-78, so a fair dominance there. Really pleasing to see 63-60 tackles, even though we had a fair amount of the ball, so that's 2 weeks in a row now that we've... sorry, not 2 weeks in a row, 2 weeks out of the last three that we've led the tackles count. Source did it right in the hit-outs, I thought, 42-34. The freeze for 27-15. I thought we got a pretty good ride from the umpires, particularly in the first half.
We did.
I thought that if you're a Saints supporter, you would have been jumping through the television, to be honest with you. Disposals per scoring shot, 13.48, were a little bit wasteful. 61 inside 50s to 45 suggests that with 61 inside 50s, you could have expected maybe a few more goals than we got.
Okay, just on that, on the scoring shots, at the ground, so many people around me were saying, oh, you know, if St Kilda kicked straight, they'd be in this and we'd be in trouble. And I kept going, look how many points we've kicked. If we'd kicked straight, they still wouldn't be in trouble.
Yeah, I mean...
It kind of just got me that there's that attitude. They only looked at that one side and didn't realise how poorly we were actually kicking as well.
I think there was a period early in the third quarter when the Saints just got on a little bit of a run and cost themselves a bit of momentum with some poor finishing. Had they snaffled one or two of those misses in the third, then it could have been interesting. We went at nearly, 3.81 inside 50s per goal, which is almost unheard of for us. Nearly two inside 50s per scoring shot. So we weren't terribly efficient in our forward 50. Contested possessions broke even pretty much, 159 to 154. It was that kind of game. We didn't really dominate on the outside either, even though we had slightly more disposals. 259 to 252. We're more efficient with the ball, but only marginally so. And I haven't got an efficiency inside forward 50, but I reckon that would have dropped that off a bit. Marks inside 50 were even. Clearances were pretty much even, 37 to 35. The Saints had more rebound off halfback, but that's probably because the ball spent more time in our forward line. And that's about it for the head-to-head stats. And really what all that points to is just that we use the ball better.
Yeah, we did, but I don't know, what was the overall efficiency rating?
72 and a bit to 71.
That's very good, considering the conditions. I'm actually surprised that it was that high.
I don't just mean, though, that we kicked and handballed better. I mean that we actually used the ball more constructively. I think our rebound off halfback was more constructive and more aggressive than St Kilda's. And particularly in the first half, we were able to push up fairly high with our defensive line and really locked the ball in and play some territory football in that first half, or particularly in the first quarter and a half at least. So I just felt like we were using the ball better, but then breaking down with our entries into forward 50.
Well, the one thing we have got is a lot of options up forward, and we should actually be using the ball better than the majority of sides, because virtually every member of our forward 50 is a potential scorer, whereas you look at St Kilda, they were relying heavily on Bruce to be their scorer.
Well, he had their whole score up to, half time at least. So,
yeah.
And they don't have it. I mean, you know, not having Revolt, they really lose there. And we were able to hold down their other forward options pretty comfortably, I thought. Let's work through some individual stats. And highest possession getter for the match was Rory Laird with 34 touches, 15 and 19, 4 marks, 5 tackles. Couple of inside 50s, had 11 contested possessions, went at 85%, and 6 rebound 50s. I thought that was the kind of game that we expect from Rory when things are going our way.
Yeah, and a very brave game as well. He took some hard knocks, you know, taking marks, etc. He was back to his very best, I thought.
They did have one behind the ball, which was either, for the first quarter, it left Lever as the free man, and then generally after that, that kind of man Lever up, which then made Lady, the free man. And Josh Bruce was interviewed on Triple M after the game, and he actually said, yeah, no. We talked about beforehand what we had to do. We know they get run off of halfback, so like Lever and Laird, and we had to stop them. And I'm thinking, you didn't do it, did you?
No,
they didn't.
No.
They knew about it, but they just couldn't execute it.
Matty Crouch had another good game, 29 touches, 10 kicks, 19 handballs, which was good because at halftime his kicked handball ratio was a bit off. Couple of marks, couple of tackles, 3 inside 50s, 10 contested, went at nearly 80%, which is good for Matt.
Yeah, really nice contested game from him.
Yeah, I felt like it was a good balanced game from Matt without being spectacular. I felt like he cracked in when he needed to and also distributed the ball pretty well.
Yeah, I liked his game. It was, as you've both been saying, it was pretty all-round what he did with the ball. You know, sometimes he handballed, sometimes he foot passed, but at least he was lifting his eyes.
Yep. Now, the next one is... Sorry, go on, Nick.
I was just going to say, his consistency this year has been really pleasing.
It's been a real feature.
Excellent year.
Yep. Now, the next one's going to be a bit polarising. I'd be interested to see what you guys think. Richie Douglas.
I was going to say, did it start with a D?
Yeah, 28 disposals, 12 kicks, 16 handballs, took 3 marks, 4 tackles, 2 inside 50s, 11 contested possessions, 6 clearances, had the 5 clangers, but also went at 71.5% efficiency. How did you guys see his game?
Well, to be honest, I liked it because, you know, although he... I didn't like his errors, and that's where he let himself down in that particular area. And but, you know, I read some of the comments on Big Footy, and I thought, these people aren't watching the game, because the guy is very brave, and he put his body in a lot of hard, tight situations, and I thought he played a good game, marred it with some of his disposals, but apart from that, it was a good game.
For me, he would be up there in the best players in spite of those clangers, which were horrendous when he did them, because twice he kicked to one player surrounded by three Saints and saying, well done, Dougie, when you had three people free and we could see them. But overall, and particularly in that first quarter, he's the one that set the tone. And this is not going to go down well on Big Footy, but he was kind of playing McKay's defensive midfield role, and Beach was playing his wing and then into a forward line role. So we actually use those two players to cover where McCain normally does as a fill-in man. And I thought he actually did, Douglas actually did really well at that.
You know how to tarnish a guy by mentioning McCain. I mean.
But that's why McKay actually gets games. And people, okay, they do have some valid criticisms of him of what he needs to do, and he needs to be doing it better, et cetera, for such a senior player. But the reason why, and I've been watching what he's been doing this year and where the coaches use him, is we use McKay all over the ground to fill in. Okay, he's not outstanding, but we're going to get AFL quality from him.
No, we're not going to get AFL quality from him, Nikki. And
yeah, well, we haven't at games, which is getting
tough. Because D-Max giving you 14 to 15 touches, Richie Douglas gave us 28 doing a similar role.
Yeah, he did, and he played really well.
And not only that, I thought Richie Douglas and also Rory Atkins both set the tone early with some very good attack on the football.
Yes.
And I felt like Richie really cracked in, particularly early. And I actually liked his game, and I'll forgive the clangers simply because he cracked in and really set the tone. It was quite obvious to me that there was a fair amount of intent in that first quarter, and it was controlled aggression. It was aggression at the football. A couple of blokes that I reckon had the blowtorch on them, and I wouldn't mind betting Douglas and Atkins were two of those. I felt like both of them responded, and particularly Richard and PJ's right on the chat. You know, you just wanted to be a bit more consistent, but it was a contentious move to put him in that role, and I felt like at least against St Kilda, it certainly paid dividends.
Correct, I agree with everything you said. That was a nice summary there, Phoenix.
Brody Smith also had a good game, 26 touches, 13 and 13, took 6 marks.
I was just going to say, his clean handling with the balls bobbling around and other players were fumbling was outstanding. Sometimes he'd take the ball and be like, how did you do that?
Yeah, he's a good player to watch when he's on song. 7 inside 50s as well, so that was a team high. 7 contested possessions when it's 77%, which is good because his efficiency has been a little bit off of late. 4 rebound 50s as well to go along with that. I felt like it's probably one of the better games from Brody for a while, but it's just, if anything, it just highlights what we miss when Brody's shut down across halfback.
Yep, and I had one criticism of Brody, and at least 2 or 3 times when he's trying to kick the cover off the ball when he's passing it, and as a result of that, miskicked it. I remember one going straight to the opposition, and the other two became carpet skidders, but overall very good. But I think at times he overdoes the hard kicking bit.
Well, it's like anyone that has an unconventional kicking style, and Brody kicks almost at 45 degree angles to his body, Macca, and you know as well as I do that you only got to be a millimetre off, and that ball's not hitting its target. And it's one of those things with Brody, you forgive him his unconventional style because he can kick the cover off the thing and get lots of metres with those long raking kicks. But it is a bit problematic sometimes when he's trying to spot a player up.
Yep.
But to me, as I mentioned earlier, it really indicates how important Brody is to our rebound game off half-back. And I'd be very interested to see whether we try to get Seeds back in as soon as possible if his form dictates, because having Seedsman on the halfback line as well, it's a bit of a double whammy then, and it's hard to match up on both of them. So I think it'll be important for Paul Seedsman to get himself up and running, and body permitting and form permitting, I wouldn't mind betting that he'll find himself back in the ones.
Well, we've got three guys back there that sort of, depending on how the opposition man up on us, rotate in that role of rebounding, and because Lever can play that role as well. And I thought the first quarter he was the one that was doing it, and I thought he had a very, very good first quarter.
Well, the difference between Smith and Snake is that Jake will give those deft kicks, those outlet kicks, whereas Brody will get ground, will get field position.
And Jake has sometimes trouble with the deft kicks, just like Brody has trouble with the long kicks.
Oh, he went at 90% on.
Yeah, he did. He did. Friday he had night. An excellent game.
And spotted up some beauties. I felt.
Yeah, but I was just talking previously. We've seen a couple of those where he just doesn't quite get it, and it's a bit deadly because they're closer to goal when that happens.
I was just going to say, the one I really ship myself is if Hardigan tries to do it.
Yeah, but he's. I spoke of Rory Atkins. I felt like he started the game really well and then was a bit patchy for the rest of it, but overall a pretty decent game from Atkins. 11 kicks, 14 handballs for 25. He had 6 marks, 5 tackles, 5 inside 50s. Only the 8 contested posies, went at 68%, so a touchdown. We want to see everyone above 70. 2 clearances as well. What I liked about Rory's game was that he answered the call for a little bit more physical contest. And whilst he wasn't at his dominating best, I felt like he cracked in when he needed to.
Well, he's a brilliantly talented individual, and I would set the bar at him to what I'd like him to achieve. To set his goal at becoming a 30 possession a game man, because he's got such good talent and such good usage of the ball that if he could do that, he'd go up a level where he belongs. And at the moment, he's a good footballer. He could become a classy footballer if he's got just those extra few possessions.
I wonder whether part of him pulling his finger out is to do with the fact that Beach was in the team and he played on the wing. So you've got Beach breathing down his neck, who's after that role, and Seedsman coming back in the SNFL. I have to pull my finger out or I'm going to get dropped.
He would have been given the message because, he let us down badly at times the week before. So he would have really got the message. And, look, he's a very talented individual. And as Phoenix said, at least he was going in hard in that first quarter. And I thought his best quarters were the first and the last, and not quite so good in the second and the third. But he is a highly talented individual.
The second and third is when they really tried to shut the game down. So that kind of stops your run a bit.
Well, and that's when Rory's got to try and work himself into the game. And you're right, Nikki. When the game is shut down a little bit, it's Rory's output and Smithers' output and a couple of the other outside runners like Miller, etc. They rely heavily on us getting contested ball. And St Kilda matched us for periods of the game, particularly through that third quarter. And so the ball wasn't coming out as cleanly. And I guess that's where Rory's got to try and work himself into the game. But overall, I think it was his best game for a month, and certainly the most aggressive I've seen Rory maybe this season, actually. So it wasn't bad.
Yep.
Brad Crouch, 9 kicks, 15 handballs for 24 touches, just the 1 mark, the 8 tackles, 4 inside 50s, 13 contested possessions, went at 75%, 7 clearances. Very interested to see what you guys think of Brad's game.
Handy.
Okay, one thing I really liked, and it would not have shown up on TV at all, was that one stage where we had St Kilda had the ball kind of up on our half forward line. The defenders were matched up on other players, and McCartan was free, and Brad was the one near him. Brad manned up on McCartan, and he was following him around, and you could see our other defenders were going, nope, that's fine. We trust that. The fact that he actually knew that that was his role to do that, which is something that we've seen a bit lacking from our mids in our losses, which is they have not been willing to be defensive. And there was something from Wig was doing something similar in the SANFL, which I wasn't happy about. To me, that actually spoke a really high volume about his game that, okay, even though the ball's up there and I'm midfield and that's where I should be, the team needs me here.
What I didn't like about Brad's game was that when the game was there to be won in the first half, Brad's stats at halftime were 0 kicks, 6 handballs. And I still think, and I said this, I reckon, a week or two ago, that when Brad's under pressure, he tends to give hot potato handballs. And he doesn't have that core strength or that acceleration to break free from congested situations. And we need him to find it because he's getting enough of the footy and his defensive work is pretty good. And there's no doubting, you know, his effort. His, 7 clearances, 13 contested possessions and, 8 tackles. So team high, 8 tackles is a good defensive effort from Brad. But he needs to be a playmaker, particularly when Rory gets held. He needs to be a playmaker, and at the moment, when the pressure is on, he tends to give the quick hands rather than try to burst free. Whether he's capable or not of that at this stage, I'm not sure. But that's the only knock I had on Brad. He certainly found a reasonable amount of it and was involved for pretty much the whole game.
Yeah, as I said, I rated him as a handy player without being a star player. You know, and you're quite right, Phoenix. He's got a bit of work, you know, to do with his game to get up to that next level. In fairness to him, he virtually missed a year of football, and he's taking time, a little bit of time to catch up and to get back where perhaps he should be. He's certainly not there yet.
Now, Tommy Lynch, I thought his best game for quite some time, 17 kicks, 5 handballs for the 22, 8 marks, 3 goals, 1. A couple of tackles, 5 inside 50s, 10 contested
and probably still filthy against Tex.
Yep. A bit dark. I just felt like that's the kind of game that we need from Tommy. And similar to the comments about Smith, it shows the value of Lynch as a link-up player when he's allowed a little bit of latitude.
He was in our best 3 players, I thought.
Agreed.
Very good game.
We also had the Snake down back, who I thought was excellent. 15 kicks, 5 handballs for the 20. He had 6 intercept marks. He had 4 inside 50s, a couple of tackles. Only the 2 contested posies, but 90% disposal efficiency, 2 rebound 50s. He's just developing very nicely, and it was interesting in the pre-game to have a look at the comparison between himself and Alex Rance at the same stage. I don't put them as the same type of players, but the stats are very similar.
Because Jake can actually defend.
Exactly. But very similar at the same age.
The interesting thing about stats is they don't always tell the whole story, because I think you said he had 2 contested possessions. But a lot of his marks were taken running the wrong way, and we could have got half or backing into a pack where he could have been half killed, and without any regard for his own safety, and he took the mark.
It's a bloody good point, and Jake hasn't been credited with a contested mark, and the statistician must not have been watching that game because...
Yeah.
Yes, he takes intercept marks, but they're all impact situations.
They are.
He's either floating across the front or, what have you. Very rarely is he taking marks free unless he's an outlet player. And for
because he's got that leap and those long arms on him that gets him clear air, so to speak, to attack the ball. But he's got body pressure.
Yep.
The whole time. And yet they don't count it as a contested mark. It's ridiculous.
No, not a contested mark, not a contested possession. Astounding. And when you look at it, you know, it. We understand the value of having Jake in our team, not only because of what he does, but also the doubt that he puts in the opposition's mind, because they've got to kick the ball away from him far enough that because he will hunt everything down. Tex, I thought, had a reasonable game and was good early when the game was up for grabs. 13 kicks, 5 handballs for the 18, took 7 marks, kicked 3-2, including one off Tommy. 6 inside 50s.
What was the umpire thinking, seriously?
I don't know.
How can that be to advantage, but everybody has stopped? He's like, can I take the ball?
Yeah,
okay,
I know.
Okay.
Bit silly.
It's ridiculous.
Look, I thought Tex's intent early was good, and then I thought he was just solid after that.
He was moving quite well.
Yeah. Look, I don't subscribe to everyone saying he's injured, because there's been talk about him having osteitis or, you know, a foot problem or whatever. But you don't wheel around on your left and kick it from 55 metres, Macca, do you, with a sore groin or an abductor or a bad foot?
No, not at all. I actually thought he played a good captain's game. He set the example at the start of the game, and, you know, once the machine started, he still contributed as the game went along. I just thought it was a pretty good game from Tex.
Yep. Joshy Jenkins, I thought, also had a good game and, again, showed some intent, which is what we want from JJ. 12 kicks, 2 handballs for the 14 touches, but he took 8 marks and 3 of those were contested. Had the 3 goals, 3. 5 hitouts as well, couple of inside 50s. 9 contested possessions. His disposal efficiency was down a little bit, though, 57.1, but took 4
That's
marks
That's also
inside.
For those 3 points.
Yeah, took 4 marks inside 50. What I like seeing is Josh actually inviting body contact and pushing off in a couple of those contested situations.
Did those nicely.
Yep, and it overall just showed a little bit more aggression, which is all we ask for.
Yeah, I think, you know, as we said, Atkins has probably had been spoken to what he had to do. There's no doubt what Jenkins was asked to do, and that was to use that great big lard arse of his and his big body and do something rather than just stand and watch the little blokes do it. Although I did catch him, he was guilty of that once, and where Mrs. Macca said some terrible things, which I won't repeat. and quite disgusting, actually. And there was a lot of abuse going in his direction about not helping the little bloke.
I think I know the one she's talking about. And at the ground, and when we saw the replay, it was like, no, fair enough, he didn't go because we needed somebody down. And I forget who the other player was who was already going up. And so he'd gone up, then you don't have one player down and they would have been ripped to shreds.
Yeah, except he spectated once the ball hit the ground as well.
I think it went forward, and he was at the back.
You're being too kind, Nicky.
Yeah, but look that aside, I thought if Jenkins gave us that every week, I'd be pretty satisfied with that. You know.
Yeah. Look, in fairness, overall, yes, he was good, but that one stood out.
Yep. Look, I thought our back six was solid. Hardigan did okay. Tails did okay. Andy
they were rotating around. Oh, Otten, 1 minute he's in the back lines, then he's the forward lines, and then he's kind of the midfield, and then he goes to the back lines. I'm just watching him going, seriously, dude, where are you playing? I don't think he quite knew, but...
Well, he played quite a reasonable amount of time in defence, particularly
in
the second half. Thought he did well, thought Jakey Livy did well, Jake Kelly did well, had 18 touches, 4 marks, 3 inside 50s. But you've got to wonder whether long-term, for structure, whether Jake holds his spot. The couple that I would like to give some bouquets to, first of all, Hugh Greenwood. Doesn't
yes.
he just make you think that he's going to be something special? He only had the 17 touches, 6 and 11, but 16 of those were contested, if you don't mind. 3 tackles.
The quality.
Yeah. Only went at 58.8, but again, I reckon that's kicking that's letting him down, because some of his handballs are superb. That spin out of the pack and give was just made me weep with joy. 5 clearances. He's only had 60% time on ground too, Hugh, and really developing very nicely. And You could pretty much say that if his form holds, he's going to be an integral part of our finals midfield lineup.
Yep.
Yeah. You said he relishes finals. You said you wept with joy. I reckon poor old Tomo would have just wept. He would have thought, I've got no chance of getting in now.
No. Tomo's not part of the equation. It's a fanciful thing. His speed's dropped.
Yep. He's not going to play a game.
What I'm making is that normally that was Thompson that used to try and get those balls. And Hughes' hands are like lightning. Yeah, they're magnificent hands. They're basketballers' hands.
Well, the thing with Greenwood when he's in tight, he's actually moving forward most of the time. So when he gets the ball, he's moving forward and his gives are usually attacking rather than hot potato. And that's the difference between how Hugh uses the ball and how Brad Crouch is using the ball at the moment. Brad seems to be a lot more stationary in the contest and therefore can't break free and therefore he's having to give off, in a defensive fashion, whereas Hugh seems to have the knack of hitting the ball at pace, and he's very good at his feet, and he uses the ball very constructively and always in an attacking fashion. A very, very good start to Hugh's AFL career.
What I like about the start to his career is the fact that you often see a young bloke come in there and he's almost apologetic that he's mm-hmm. there, but not Hugh. You know, he performed right from the get-go, and he goes in as hard, and he looks so comfortable about being there. I just think he's got a very good career ahead of him. He had to bash the door down to get in there, and once he's got in there, he's not going to let anybody take him out of there.
Yeah, and as his fitness space increases and he can get on the ground for more than 60% of the time, look out. I thought Jono Beach's debut was very serviceable. Only had the 15 touches, 7 and 8, but took 4 marks, 4 tackles as well, a couple of inside 50s, went at 80% disposal efficiency, and just one of the better AFL debut goals you'll see for a while was some candy that would have made Snake weep, I reckon.
Did you hear what the boys did when they got into the rooms afterwards? They sang the song, they called it a bath. It wasn't a shower. He had a Gatorade bath. Then when they go in for their meetings, before the meeting started, the boys put on the candy shop song for him.
Yeah, well, Jake would have that on repeat on his iPod, I reckon. So that
he won't be happy.
An interesting thing about him is he said he only had the 15 positions, but I can't remember too many other opportunities that he had. No. And I thought he did pretty well with the opportunities he had. And on top of that, there were several times when they did a panoramic view. I saw him, even though it's his first game, yelling out for players to be covered and pointing and et cetera. And I was very impressed by that.
There was one of his kicks forward which was marked by the Saints player. But I watched it went, that's where he kicks instinctively in the SANFL, because that's where was always one of our forwards is leading to. So he just kind of went back to that structure, but it was our AFL boys went up to speed with what the SANFL boys do.
It's going to be very interesting to see how we use Beach, because he played a lot
on the wing.
Well, he adds a different dimension because he's a solid player, so he can play in and out. He can play
good
up the ground.
Good contested mark.
Excellent contested mark. A very good kick. Good at his feet and doesn't shirk a contest. And I'd like to see them persevere. And I actually think that when Gov comes back, it's not Beach that drops out. It's actually probably Andy Otten out of that forward line.
Yeah, might be.
Because I think that we're very vulnerable. And this is a similar situation to Seisman down back. We're very vulnerable to having certain players shut down. In the back half, it's Brody Smith. We lose a lot of rebound when Brody sat on. We lose a lot of link-up when Tommy Lynch is sat on, but I think Jono Beach can give us a little bit of an extra dimension in that type of a player, and I'll be interested to see whether Jono's actually going to become part of our longer-term plans. I wouldn't mind it at all, actually.
Yeah, honestly, you're going to raise exactly the same point you raised, that because... if he keeps playing if he gets some more opportunity, and if he keeps playing like he did in his debut, and you'd expect probably get better with each game, he definitely looks like he can play at the level. But and I prefer him in there to Andy because Andy is that little bit slow. Now, if we got Jenkins out, and then Andy's ideal to bring in for that particular spot. And if we've got Leavitt out down back, he's ideal to bring in that for that spot. But I think just to be, and we've also been short with a couple of other injuries. But to be fair to Andy, thank you very much. But you're only going to be a replacement, in my opinion, when we got those two particular players unavailable.
And that's no slight on Andy. He's done everything he possibly can. And we know that he will go back to the SNFL and he will keep his head up and he will work like buggery to put pressure on so he can get back in.
Yeah. And, you know, it's been fantastic to see Andy running around again and playing good footy. And it's a structural thing more than anything else. But I think out of all those players vying for those spots, unfortunately, Andy just doesn't quite bring enough to the table. But he's certainly an able replacement should one of those blokes go down. The last player I just want to highlight quickly is Wayne Miller. I thought it was one of his better games for the club so far this season. Was aggressive early when he needed to be. Laid a couple of nice bumps. Fantastic in traffic. Didn't get enough of the ball. Only the 14 touches, the 9 and 5. But laid four
tackles.
Was
in good spots sometimes and wasn't used.
Yep. Disposal efficiency excellent at 85%. He's working his way into being an AFL player at this stage, and certainly once he gets a bit more core strength and a bit more confident, and we start seeing those zippy little moves through traffic, he's going to be one to watch.
He's got great awareness. There's no doubt about that. You're quite right.
Don't
know
about awareness, Macca, because sometimes he can get run down from behind. So I don't actually know whether he's got good awareness at this stage. He's good in terms of the traffic in front of him.
Yeah, I should have qualified it with that particular point. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Go on.
I was just going to say no. Really, he's good at weaving his way through the traffic. Your point about what's coming behind is a valid point because he's so busy looking left, looking right, looking forward that he hasn't got a rear vision mirror.
That's on his teammates.
Well, and he does. Though sometimes he still has that young player sort of rabbit in the headlights kind of thing sometimes and can get caught with the ball. But all that aside, I thought it was a pretty solid outing from Miller. And, you know, he's continuing his upward trajectory. A couple of quiet players. I thought Charlie Cameron, again, he's just...
He did not have a good game. Two of their goals were directly the result of mistakes he made that he should not have made.
I'm wondering if Charlie's actually got a designated role at the moment or whether he's being used in too many different positions around the ground and is struggling to have an impact on the game. He only had the 13 touches, three tackles, three inside 50s. But he went at 38.5% disposal efficiency. I wonder whether we're actually asking too much of Charlie at the moment.
Well, no, I think we were resting him more this game because the first quarter off the back of the square, every time it was Knight. Was
78%, not 78% time on ground.
Was not Charlie. We were using Charlie pretty much only in the forward line and we didn't run him off the back of the square like we normally do for most of that. He did towards the end. He got a bit more of those kind of run-throughs off the back, but most of the time it was actually Knight. We preferred to be doing that particular role. He only went on the wing once when he's gone on there a few more times as well. So I think we were pretty much parking him up forward and getting him to stay up forward.
Yeah, I reckon we were messing with his form. I'd like to see him have a role and just give him a role. I wonder if there is
something going on there.
Oh, I think Phoenix probably summed it up all right. Probably just messing around a bit, asking him to do different things each and every week. And at this stage, he's still a fairly inexperienced player. He'll get used to it. He'll get better.
And the last one, Riley Knight,
I was just going to say that Knight slotted back in.
Yeah, he's usually a bit rusty first up. He only had the 12 touches, only the three kicks out of that with the one contested possession. usable well when he had it. But he tends to come back rusty, I reckon. And I reckon if he gets a run at his form, line will improve pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Eddie was around the mark, but pretty quiet. Didn't have a huge amount of opportunities. I just reckon at times Eddie, at the moment, is just trying to be a little bit too cute and just overthinking situations somewhat. And I'd like to see Eddie be a little bit more assertive with his play and just take the opportunities when they're his and back himself in, rather than kind of, you know, be a little bit cute and try to work people in. I know it's good to work others into the game, but Eddie needs to remember that he's our gun small forward, and we need him kicking 60 goals. So a bit of an almost game from Eddie this week, I thought.
Yeah, but I'd take an almost game from Eddie every time over a lot of other players.
Oh, no doubt. He only had the 11 touches, 4 marks, a couple of goals. It's not a bad return, especially in, you know, a clogged up sort of a game.
That's what I meant. You know, it really wasn't the perfect game for Eddie to dominate in, but I still think he just looks menacing all the time, and he just scares the living shit out of the opposition.
Yeah, I just like to see him play the percentages a little bit more. I think at times he tries to do a little bit too much, and I just like to see him straight line the ball sometimes, because he tends to run alongside it and pat it along. And it looks great when it comes off, when he gets the little, you know, nutmeg through the legs or whatever. It looks really great. But there are times when Eddie just needs to straight line the ball and keep the body in line with the ball, I think. And it's similar to how Tech sometimes gets into that habit of nudging. I think at times Eddie gets into the habit of just trying to do a little bit too much when he just needs to do the basics.
Yeah,
I think Damp Squid has a very valid point in the chat. He needs the bye.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad point either.
He needs the rest. Because I've seen him at the SANFL games often like the day after or 2 days after we've played. And he's struggling to walk.
Yeah, he made that point himself. I saw him say that on the TV, that he is struggling at the moment in the sense that the bye has come at the right time for him because he's sore for a couple of days after every game.
So anyway, we're getting to the hour, so we better wrap that up. Any sort of final thoughts, guys, of the game and also of the season to date?
Well, I think we talked on Tuesday. God, I'm confusing up my days now. That we probably were likely to beat St Kilda. They did have a fast midfield, so we were interested to see how we kind of went up against that midfield, but I think we all thought it was like a 5-goal win, so we did better than that. But it still hasn't answered the questions we had after the Geelong game.
Yeah, I said 6-7, maybe up to 10. Phoenix went outright for about 10, so he'd take the prize. But yeah, I think we won by about what we should have won by, and I think Phoenix would agree with that.
Yeah, I think I said that 40 points was probably about a pass mark, didn't I? So, you know, and I think our first quarter and a bit probably raised us above that pass mark to a degree. Look, you know, you can only beat the team in front of you, and we're starting to learn how open this season is, as we said at the top of the show. So one of those, bank the 4 points and have a nice little break now, look forward to Hawthorn on the other side of it. You know, overall, if we said let's be 9-3 at the break, sitting on top with 140%+, everyone would have, sold Stiffy 18's left nut for that. So I don't think anyone can be really disappointed, even though there are still questions, as there are for just about every team in the comp.
Yeah, well, I probably lost that tatter left nothing again somewhere, but I'd say if you summed up our season so far, We're probably one game out of par, in the sense that I think we probably all secretly did believe we'd lose to Geelong. And you always have a loss somewhere to somebody. It's a bit of a surprise. But I think the Melbourne loss was the one that, to me, was the unacceptable game.
Yeah, I think you're right, Macca. I think particularly after what we served up the previous week, that one was very disappointing. The endeavour against Geelong was also disappointing, but at Cardinia Park, what can you do? We've just got to make sure we get top two. So if Geelong happen to score a Cadenia Park final, that we're not playing them. But look, I think it is what it is. It's an extremely open season of footy. It's anyone's to win at this stage. That's probably, 10 teams, I reckon, that could make a run at it in the second half of the season. So at this stage, any 4 points is good 4 points, I reckon.
Yeah. Can we talk about the SNFL now?
Yeah, just quickly, the SNFL. Nikki, you were there, were you?
Yes. All the Norwood supporters were not happy in that last quarter. The fix was definitely in, particular umpires. It was like, actually found ourselves sitting amongst some Crow supporters who seem to be quite regular SNFL goers, because we all went, oh, we haven't seen this before. It was so obvious in that last quarter they were trying to get Norwood up. I would have to say there's something that you haven't seen on the vision yet, and I hope they put it in the highlights, but it was the edge of the square, a Norwood player heading towards their forward area. He had the ball. McGovern came from an angle, our forward line, other edge of the square, absolutely sprinting those 50 metres to get to him, to tackle him. Just that intent was, whoa.
So the hammies are right then.
Oh, the hammy's fine. He was such a class above everybody else on that field. It was ridiculous. There were a couple of things he did. He just took balls out of the hands and just kept going. And you could just see the normal player just go, what? What happened? David McKay started a fight.
What? Are
they?
Mitch Greig.
Who, with his mum or somebody?
David McKay and Mitch Greig?
Yes.
That's like... That's a non-fight. That's a reverse fight.
It was actually a very clever move, because what it meant was Greig was then out of the little ruck contest in our forward lines, and he'd been there. He played so well. I couldn't believe he didn't get in the best players for Norwood, because at that game he was the one that was instrumental in their midfield. But it kept him out of it, which meant that Wiggy didn't have to contend with him and got a snap goal. So well done, McKay, on that one. That one was hilarious.
When they had their fight, Nicky, what did they use? Water pistols or what?
No. Oh, no.
Was it a pillow fight?
No, he's not happy. Wiggy pulled him down and illegally, should have been a free, and DMAC decided to basically let Greig have it. There were a few little arms being thrown around and stuff.
Yeah. On the negative side, DMAC didn't really play a good game.
No, he didn't seem to be on the ground a lot, which I thought was really weird. But that was hilariously funny when I saw that happen. I'm just like, DMAC's starting a fight.
So the experiment with Harry Deer down back seems to be going well?
Yes. Well, it was kind of odd because we put Keith up. Keith went down back. Because Gov's come back, so we didn't want to be too top heavy. So Keith went down back and played well. And Lockie Murphy, who we've been playing down back, we put up forward. So we moved a few things around than what we have been doing a little bit. But Harry was reading the ball so well and outmarking pretty much every Norwood forward. And they've got some decent ones. I will say this about Wig, and this might be why he's not getting game. If you look at his stats and you look at his overall game, he seemed to have an excellent game, and he was named amongst the best players. But when the opposition has the ball, and as a midfielder he needs to set up defensively and he needs to be accountable, he is very keen to not be standing a player if possible, and he wants to shirk. He seemed to want to shirk that responsibility, and I saw him do it a couple of times. And to me, that's a non-negotiable.
Are you saying he doesn't man up, Nikki?
Or if he does, he tries to man up on somebody who he's pretty sure they're not going to get the ball to, so he doesn't have to get involved.
Yeah, that whole looking busy but not really being effective.
Yeah. He got better. It was in the first half that it was really noticeable that he did that a couple of times. And I was really not happy to see that. And for me, that probably puts why he hasn't been named in emergencies. and he hasn't got that recognition. Menzel kicked an absolutely amazing goal. And I forget, and I reckon it was Gov who actually gave him the ball, and he's on the boundary line. And you know that, the grandstand end, how tight that is.
Yeah.
And he's just done his little snap from there. And Gov knew, I give it to him. He's going to kick it. And he did. Signorello needs to learn this is not under 18s. He's still too slow.
Signorello is not going to make it.
I don't think he will.
I know he was a speculative pick, and Hamish had some high hopes for him. But what I've seen of him, he just looks out of his depth, unfortunately. He came from the school system rather than the TAC system, and I think it really shows.
And Jarman's passed him already.
Yeah.
Are we playing Jarman on the wing?
How is Jarman going?
Oh, he kicked 3 goals, and one of them was this amazing little snap around the corner that he did. And, like, he's, like, really had to extend his leg out quite far to get around the other player. But the fact that he's just got the footy brain that says, this is what I have to do to get the ball in there, and he makes that decision in an instant, he will make it.
So a couple of others. How did Tom Duda go, and also Seedsman?
Seeds was better than what I have seen him when he's had his first game back in the SNFL before. I remember last year one of his first games where he had come back and he did not have a good game. He was consistent, not outstanding. Ran hard, seemed to run out the game quite well. I think he'll have at least one, if not two, games in the SNFL. Yeah, I think Tory comes. And I think that's him. Gov, I think, will just come straight back in.
Hmm. Well, is it this AFL, the Crows haven't got a bye next week, have they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, they've got the bye the same.
Oh, bugger.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Well, I think there was complaints last year when our SNFL guys didn't have the bye and our AFL team did, and that kind of stuffed up our training and everything else in the mandatory 4-day break that they have to have as AFL players. So they've actually done the right thing by us, and that we don't have the AFLPA yelling at us.
Yeah.
But it's unfortunate because we've had these two players that have come back from an injury that they've played one game and they haven't gone. But that could actually be a benefit.
So given we had no injuries to speak of in the A's, it looks like probably at this stage one unforced change, Gov in, and hopefully, or not hopefully for Andy's sake, but hopefully it's Andy rather than Jono Beach.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see what they do.
And a lovely touch from Jono Beach's family, that his dad, brothers, and I think a couple of his uncles all wore ties in his mum's favourite colour, because she passed away last year in October.
Yeah, it's such a good story, the Jono Beach story, and you know, it's such a pity that she got taken too soon, but he's doing her proud, that's for sure. And I was so pleased to see him get a run and to make the best of it, and that goal just capped it off. So it was a really good,
I think, the first tackle that he did, and Deb and I just looked at each other and went, that's what he can bring. That's what we know he can do. And that was great for him to get probably that as his first kind of touch.
Yep.
Got that confidence up. And then when he kicked the goal, we had to give him a standing ovation for that one.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that both he and Hugh Greenwood, they just kept on giving. They've both been giving 100% and doing everything possible to make the selectors pick them. You mentioned about Harry Wiggy just not quite finishing his game off by doing, picking up players, et cetera, et cetera. And when you're in that position of being in the B grade and, in the SAFL, and you want to, and you're trying to bust into the side that's hard to bust into, you just have to keep doing the right thing repeatedly, game after game after game.
Macker, I think he's seen the writing on the wall, to be honest.
You might be right. I know you've written him off.
I would have played him. I haven't written him off from a talent perspective, but I just reading the tea leaves, he's clearly out of favour. We won't see him this season, barring, a fair horrible run of injuries, and I think he'll be on the trade table at the end of the season.
Which might be a good thing for him.
Well, it probably will be, because I don't think he's going to get much of a run with us. Anyway, guys, I reckon that let's call it there at the 70-minute mark. It's been a good chat, and we're leading, obviously, into the bye this weekend. There will be a Tuesday Night Live. We'll be talking about the season to date, but no Scorpus on Thursday, and obviously no weekend shows at all. So we'll be on Tuesday Night Live, and then a bit of a break, and then back the following week for Tuesday Night Live leading up to our game versus Hawthorn. Thanks so much for everyone who have supported us over the first half of the season. It's been so enjoyable for us to bring it to you, and we're glad you're enjoying it. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at AFL Crowcast. If you're listening via iTunes, please give us a review and a rating. It helps our standing on iTunes. Nikki and Macca, thanks very much for your work so far this season. And we can have a bit of a rest now. After Tuesday, at least.
I'll just have to practice screaming at something else.
Oh, well.
I'm sure you'll find something, Macca.
Well, I won't have you there, Nikki, to have a crack at.
Save it all up. All right, guys. On that note, we'll bid you farewell and see you on Tuesday night.
Yeah, good night, all.
Night, all.